Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I am your host, Rick Wolf. Well, on this morning's show, because we ran short of time last Sunday morning, I want to continue with my my clinic on youth coaches, with particular emphasis on those parents who are volunteering to serve as coaches within their community. And if we have time later on in the hour, I want to tell you about a Little League Baseball issue where a kid basically fought Little League Baseball for 3 years in order to be able to play with a particularly, it was a baseball. It's the same as any other baseball, as a white baseball, but because of this kid's visual impairment, he had to use a ball that was yellow. Same size, same specs, everything as a white baseball, but Little League basically said, no, this is not going to happen. And it finally took a letter intervention from the Department of Justice to intervene, department to basically come in and say, yeah, Little League Baseball, let's make a reasonable accommodation for this kid. Anyhow, I'll tell you more later on. But first of all, I do want to talk about and do a quick recap of the key points we discussed last week. And I you know, this is for parents who are coaching, helping out within their towns and communities. If you're working with kids between the ages, let's say, 6 through 12, and, of course, as always, we had a great forum. Take your calls at 1-877-337-6666. That's brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. You can plan your stay at mohegansun.com. Okay, very quickly, before we get to the new points today, first of all, we talked about sarcasm. If you're coaching kids, you know, you just don't use any sarcasm, because kids, especially at those early ages, they just don't get it. They don't understand it. Number two, organize your practice sessions so that everybody who is, you know, on the team, they're moving all the time. You don't want to have any kind of standing around in any practice situation. This involves a little bit of pre-planning by you as the coach as to what you're going to do, but make sure you do that so, again, there's just no downtime where kids are just basically getting bored. Number three, if you don't know the rules of the sport you're coaching, well, you better learn them. And fact is, you know, you might say, well, I played this sport when I was a kid growing up, but it's a good possibility that some of the rules have changed or been modified since you were a kid. So before you go into the season working within that sport, make sure you go back and review the rules before you get involved in coaching them. Number four, and this, I always say this, and it's very simple. No profanity around children, especially kids ages 6 through 12. You know, if you as a grown-up, if you can't control your mouth, well, then perhaps you shouldn't be working with youngsters. Number five, when it comes to praise, yeah, kids do expect praise, and you have to be, you have to fulfill that need. You should be lavish, and most importantly, you want to be specific when you praise a kid. Tell each youngster on the team what they did well in the game. And just don't say, well, you did a nice job or you played well. No, that's not enough. Be very specific about what they did well in each contest so they know exactly that they really registered as to what they're doing and improving. That's important. Again, be specific in your praise. And number six, and again, this is probably the most important one of all, at the youth level, everybody plays and plays a lot. You have to make sure that everybody on your roster gets in the game and plays a lot. Again, we're talking at the youth level now. We're not talking at the high school varsity or club team level. We're talking about youth level where every kid comes to every game expecting to play, to break a sweat, to get the uniform dirty, and to play and play a lot. You know, as I said this last week, and it's so true, as a coach, you have to understand and accept the fact that the other parents, they come to the games to watch their kid play. And honestly, at the youth level, they really don't care that much if the team wins or loses so long as their youngster plays and plays a lot. These are just fundamentals. It's just amazing to me how often youth coaches just don't seem to remember these basic fundamentals. Now, reminder, if you'd like to hear the discussion we had on these particular rules from last week's show, and as I said, we had a lot of great calls and a lot of great suggestions, all you have to do is to go to WFAN.com, and you can click on the link to my show from last Sunday. Or, alternatively, you can go to AskCoachWolf.com, and you can find a brief recap of all these points as well, and also there's a link to the podcast there, too. Okay, now, on today's show, I want to continue with more coaching tips, and again, I'll invite you, I'll take your calls as well. Let me first pick up on that tip about playing time. Yes, we know that all the kids got to come and they all have to play a lot in the game. As a direct follow-up to that, as a corollary, in addition to all of your players getting ample playing time, you're also going to have to make sure that they rotate and play different positions during the course of the game. That is, everybody will take turns. Let's say that you're playing soccer. Everybody's going to take a turn playing forward. Sometimes they're going to play on defense as a fullback, or they're going to play infield in baseball, or whatever it might be. They've got to make sure they rotate the players. And you're going to have to ask one of your assistant coaches to basically maintain a scorecard during each game to make sure every youngster plays and plays different positions. And why? Because I guarantee you at some point in the course of the season, some mom or dad's going to come up to you as the coach and say, how come my kid only plays defense or never gets a chance to play up front in soccer? Well, unless you have a well-maintained scorecard, you're not going to be able to answer that question. And if you delegate this task to an assistant coach, you got to make sure they do the job well and are paying attention in the course of the game. But again, it's a very simple sort of easy tactic to follow, but you got to make sure you do it so all the kids at the youth level know they're playing different positions during the course of a game. Now, what about your worries that a youngster might get hurt? I'm talking particularly here about baseball, but it could be any sport. If you're afraid that a youngster might get injured, well, first of all, what you do is you say to the youngster, look, what you have to do is basically prove to me as the head coach that you can catch, for example, a thrown a ball. I mean, if you're going to play first base and you're going to be catching the ball from across the infield, you got to prove to me that you can catch a ball that's thrown with some velocity. So the way to do that is to basically say, if you can prove to me in practice that you can catch balls thrown at a pretty good speed, well, then I'll let you play first base in the game. Now, you don't want to be discouraging about this. That's not the point. You want to say to the youngster, look, all you got to do is just show me and prove to me that you can do this, and now I'll let you play first base in the course of any contest. Same way with pitchers. If a kid wants to pitch in Little League Baseball, well, you know, that's fine. What you say is, here's what we have to do. And this is for all the pitchers on your team. You say, during the course of practice, I'm going to take you off to the sideline, and I'm going to have you throw 10 pitches. If you can throw 7 of those pitches for strikes, you know, on a consistent basis, then certainly you've earned a chance to go out and pitch in the game. But if you can't throw strikes, I'm not going to put you out there because it's just going to slow the game down, and it's just going to be kind of tedious for everybody involved. So let them know that they have to earn their playing time in the sense that they have to show to you as a coach that they can throw strikes or they can catch the ball across the diamond. And that's a fair way because it applies to all the kids, and they have to show they can do this. Okay? All right, we're going to take calls on this because a lot of things we're going to cover here. 1-877-337-6666. Let's start with our friend Coach Tom out of North Arlington. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Rick.
How are you doing?
Okay, great. I heard what you're talking about again like last week. That's yep. Why I rarely call 2 weeks in a row. but I just wanted to get more involved, like you were talking about plan your practice. I wanted to get into that specifically.
Yes.
I'm dealing more from a basketball standpoint, but it certainly applies to baseball. And I did this in high school as well. Number one, the thing is, write your practice schedule out. Don't just plan it. You have to actually write it out, put down all the things you could do, and I would even go so far as to put times on it.
Ah.
Okay, for yourself. Okay, for yourself and your assistant coaches, so that they're not just ad-libbing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And as far as, you know, the times, you know, you try to do that the best you can because, number one, you always want to put down more than you're going to need in practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's better at the end of practice if you have stuff left over for next practice rather than standing around wondering what to do next. Okay? The other thing is with the times, generally – I know it's from basketball. If you cut your drill short where they want, the kids want to keep doing it, means you did a good job. Okay? Seriously, because all these times I've watched a lot of recreation where they're doing it, and the kid's starting to get bored doing, you know, whatever they're doing, even if it's, you know, just layups or whatever. Okay. It's better that they're too short. The other thing, and I think is probably the key to best of my practice, is mix your drills. Okay, like on basketball, I would do an offense, a defense, and a fast break or whatever. But more importantly, hard drills, okay, drills for discipline, and then mix in between fun drills. So you're not doing a whole bunch. And to me, people don't realize how important it is, you know, because, you know, that then it makes practice not only, you know, good, but it makes it interesting. I used to have kids used to try to cheat over and look at my, you know, my practice sheet just to see. So I used to always put their favorite drills at the very end, okay? And then, guys, we just didn't get to it today. You know, so I would play with them with that a little bit. But, you know, seriously, mixing them, okay? And the most important things, discussions are for after practice, not during. Because, you know, discussions during practice, to me, I always felt, I said, listen, we're going to have a discussion, I win. In practice, because we don't have enough time, and there's everybody else. As soon as we're done, you may win every argument, as long as it's the two of us or the team on the side. We just don't have the time. And basically, that's all I wanted to say about
well,
that.
Well, Tom, as always, these are superb observations and great suggestions. And as always, I thank you. You know, this is what we're talking about. If you're going to coach, make the conscious effort, as Tom just said. It's a good idea to not only just pre-plan your practices, but also take some time to actually write the time and the sequences you're going to use, mix in the more pleasant drills with the ones that are a little more tedious, and whatever you do, keep it moving. If you want to talk to your team about a strategy or some sort of different kind of approach, don't do it during practice time. Do it after the practice for a few minutes. Again, keep your comments short, but keep it moving at all times so the kids saying, yeah, this was great fun. I can't wait to come back to the next practice session. If you succeed in doing that, you know you're going to have kids who are all fully engaged. They're all going to feel like they're making progress in terms of mastering their skills and abilities, and that becomes a real win-win. And again, it all starts with the head coach taking time to sit down and figure out how we're going to run a practice so everybody comes away feeling good, productive, and having a good time.
Radio.com.
And welcome back to the Sports Edge. I'm Rick Wolf, your host. We're talking this morning about youth coaching tips. If you're going to be volunteering to coach your youngster between the ages of, say, 6 and 12, it makes no difference what sport it is. There are certain, you know, paradigms you want to make sure you follow if you're going to be coaching. Let me just very quickly get into this because I know this is something that people always wonder about. Disciplining kids on your team. Now, this can get a little dicey because basically you're going to be volunteering to coach not only your kid, but obviously other parents' kids as well. And we all know that some kids can be a little bit obstreperous at times. I have found that the best approach is when a kid is not behaving accordingly, you basically bring the kid over and say, well, we'll have to give you a timeout, which means that you're going to take them out of the game and have them stand next to you on the sidelines. Or if it's a practice session, the same thing. Take them out of the practice session, have them stand next to you during the course of the exercises. Do not let them go off and stand somewhere else or go off and to talk to other kids. Just make sure they stand with you as you observe the game or the practices. Now, the reason why we do this is that most youngsters can't wait to get back into the action. And the longer they realize that that's not going to happen, as long as you have them on the sidelines, well, usually the more contrite they become. When you feel they've served their punishment time, then you ask them directly if they can now behave themselves appropriately. If they say yes, and they seem sincere about it, well, then you put them back into the action. But if they misbehave again, well, then they're right back to the sidelines with you. Again, you playing off the fact that kids want to get involved, they want to be having fun with their friends in the course of the contest. But again, if they violate that rule of misbehaving, then you just give them a timeout, and you continue to give them a timeout until they finally come around to realizing that they have to figure out they got to play just like all the rest of the kids as well. Okay, let's go back to some more calls here. Let's go to our friend AJ in Princeton, New Jersey. AJ, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Great talking with you again.
You too, AJ.
Listen, I'm going to take a little bit of a contrarian approach here. I remember one of the reasons I wanted to be a parent was because I wanted to be a coach.
Okay.
I mean, seriously. And I was really looking forward to it. And I'm going back to the early 2000s now. And let me start with baseball. You know, I'm talking about 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. And probably the biggest disappointment I had was doing what you're describing. I mean, really looking forward to practice, really looking forward to how can I teach these kids. I want to teach them the fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
you know, beyond what is a baseball. But, you know, what do you do when the ball's hit to you? What do you do with a fly ball, tagging up, running bases? You know, I mean, there's a million fundamentals. And where do you start? So I was really looking forward to that. And what do you do when the kids don't show up for practice?
Okay.
You know, I mean, seriously, when you have a few kids show up, all of a sudden you're in the improv mode. Okay, I'll do what I can with who shows up. But I just want to say there's a lot of this that's on the parents' responsibility. Now, we pick on the parents all the time, but one of the responsibilities is getting them to practice. And then the other disappointment is you're competing against birthday parties, family events. So sometimes kids don't show up for games.
AJ, here,
and at that,
as I said, this is a universal concern, particularly for kids who, as you say, are 6 through, say, 10, because they do have other conflicts in their schedule. And many times the parents, you know, their family commitments, whatever it might be, other kids who are playing sports as well. This is incumbent upon a conversation that you as the head coach have to have, obviously, with the parents at the first practice and say, look, we're going to have to come to an agreement. If you know that there are going to be conflicts with your youngster and playing in the games or practice sessions, you must let me know at least 3 or 4 days before that event. Otherwise, we're going to have, if half the team doesn't show up, we're going to have to basically just forfeit. And that's not fair to not only the kids in our team who do show up to play in the game, but to the other team as well, because they're all those kids looking forward to competing in the game as well. So you got to have an understanding with the parents that you got to have the civility to tell me there's going to be some issues and miss this and miss that. If this pattern continues, then what you do is, you bring in the parents again and say, look, I was very clear about this before the season began. Now a third of the season has gone past and we're having these issues. Let me know. Otherwise, we'll just basically take the kids who are going to be here all the time and have them assigned to other teams in the league, because it's not fair to have these continuing misses and lapses without having some prior notification. AJ, I don't know how else to do that except that, you know, it is a concern, and it happens every year because some parents just figure, oh, what's the difference? It's just youth sports. Well, it is. But you're also trying to teach your youngsters a sense of responsibility and, again, accountability. As you said, it goes sideways, it gets derailed, the kids and the parents don't show up. Simple as that. AJ, thank
you. Rick, you know, when it comes to the discipline,
yep.
You know, just, I mean, basketball was probably the toughest sport to coach. And when you have kids under 10 years old or around 10 years old, and they start running around, playing with each other, you know, playing tag and stuff.
Yeah.
You can't be, you know what you can't do. So what I did was I'd make them run a couple of laps.
Yep.
And I even told the parents, look, I'm not going to do anything other than embarrass the kid. If he's going to do this, I'm just going to embarrass him. I mean, that's the worst I could possibly do. That's as far as I'm going to go.
Yeah. And Jay, let me respond to that. Thank you, as always, for the call. You know, you can always resort to having a youngster and say, okay, obviously, you're not really paying attention. You're misbehaving. This obviously happens more often with the younger kids. And you can have them do a lap if you want. But the fact is, I find it more effective to really sort of sit down with the kid or have the kid come off to the side and not be able to do anything. And if the pattern of misbehavior continues, at that point, as the coach, you have to have a private conversation with the parents and say, look, we're having some difficulty here because I'm finding I'm spending more and more time not coaching the kids, but basically having to address an issue with your youngster. What do you, as the parents, think we should do about this? Because it's not fair to not only your youngster, but also the rest of the kids in the team. You know, at the youth levels, you can get the parents' opinion about how they feel their kid, if the kid's being unruly and is being a distraction. And that is something that I think that a youth coach needs to be sensitive about because, again, you are responsible not just for that one kid, but for all the kids. And obviously, if they see you're having to deal with some sort of a discipline issue, they're going to be distracted themselves. As simple as that. All right, before I get to the calls, one other thing I want to mention to you, team captains. This is something that we talk about all the time. If you're going to have captains, you should appoint captains on a rotating basis. In other words, have a captain for different captains for each game. I mean, again, we're talking about young kids here, ages 6 through 12. We're not talking about varsity athletes. So why not give every youngster on your team, regardless of their ability, you know, get them a chance to be appointed team captain for each game. I mean, as simple as that, because a kid feels like a sense of responsibility, a sense of personal pride. They're being recognized for their potential leadership. But you got to make sure every kid on your team gets a chance to be a captain for at least one game. And obviously, if you have not that many games and you have a lot of kids in your roster, well, you can have two or three captains for each game. It's as simple as that. But make a big deal about it because you want to get them feeling a sense, as I say, of personal pride and accomplishment. Another quick point. If one of your kids or your players gets hurt during a practice or a game, well, you know, as a coach, you got to take that seriously. You have to use all sorts of precautions, common sense. Obviously, you have to have a first aid kit, a fully stocked first aid kit at all practices and games. But you can forget the old school, hey, just toughen up, just rub it with some dirt and get back into the game. That kind of old school approach went out of style 30 years ago. And besides, if you try that kind of approach today, you'll probably end up being served with a lawsuit by the kid's parents. So if a youngster is hurt and they go down and there's some tears and some you know concern, it's your job to immediately go out and to support the kid. You know, get them off the field, bring them over the sidelines, make sure they're getting some medical attention, and take it seriously. At that age, it's much more important to take all precautions when it comes to a kid, you know, getting injured. Simple as that. Let's move on. Let's go to our friend Jack over in Fairlawn. Hey, Jack. Jack, you there?
Jack, you there? Yeah, I'm here, Rick. Your station's kind of breaking up a little bit, but things are. You know, this is a great topic, and not like Tom from North Arlington. I love calling in every week. So, couple points. First of all, athletics are one of the greatest tools for teaching life lessons. And there's no better time than to teach it at a young age. You know, coaches should have their golden rules. These are things that they sit down with the kids before the season starts and the parents and let them know. Teach them commitment. Teach them about responsibility. All these things are life lessons, and there's no better place than athletics to learn these things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, referring, like I always do, to your books, if a kid or a child is able to learn, then teach, because you got to teach them also those mental aspects of the game. You know, teach them how to block out distractions at an early age. Start introducing that stuff to them at an early age. And the other topic about the practices that we were talking about the one coach talked about the fun part. throw competition into your stations. Have the kids compete against each other, not just do the skills, because now you're teaching them the skill work, and you're also teaching them to compete, which is going to be what every game is going to be. Plus, every practice, kids are competing for playing time and positions. And these things are what make practices great. Two more things real quick, and then I'll get off and listen. But also, the parents that are now volunteering, and there's no, you know, there's no bigger heart than a volunteer. And the point is that if they're going to teach, learn what's being taught today. Like we talked about last week, things that were taught in hitting, you know, in fielding 15, 20 years ago are not being taught today. And when coaches start to recruit kids, you know, I do recruiting for my hitters and colleges about being, you know, learning the positions, learning the different versatilities, and being versatile, being able to play the outfield, the infield, be a catcher, first base. Those things are a plus. I have a girl right now going to college that she's a primary catcher, but I also worked with her in the outfield and at first base, and she would not have gotten into the school that she wanted to if she wasn't versatile.
Well, Jack, let me stop you there, Jack. As always, my thanks for your call. And to Jack's point, he's right on target. You know, the fact is, when a kid gets involved in youth sports, and we talk about this routinely, this is the venue in which he or she begins to learn about competition and learns about, you know, basically taking pride and becoming responsible and accountable for their actions. It's, you know, you get some of this perhaps in school, but it's really straight on when it comes to youth sports. And these are the intangibles, the takeaways that become life lessons, as Jack was talking about. And again, just to reinforce what he said, yeah, just because you played baseball or softball or basketball or tennis, whatever you played as a kid 20 years ago, you know, understand that a lot of these sports are taught differently now. And as you, as a youth coach, you better brush up on your basics, because quite frankly, you may be teaching these young kids today fundamentals that no longer are taught. And I think that's a crucially important lesson for all coaches who are volunteering to understand. Things change. It's as simple as that. And again, to Jack's point, you as a coach have to be aware of this. I mentioned before about the rule changes. Yeah, well, rules do change in sports, and you have to be aware of that, because at some point some 11-year-old kid's going to say, hey, coach, what's the rule about this? And if you don't know the rule in the year 2018, it's going to be kind of embarrassing. It's as simple as that. All right.
Radio.com.
Hey, a couple of quick announcements. First of all, I just want to remind you that as we go through all these various youth coaching tips, again, you can find all of these either on AskCoachWolf.com, where they're obviously written down, or you can link there to the WFAN podcast, or go to WFAN.com as well to also access the podcast for the Sports Edge. Very quickly, this coming Wednesday, May 9th at 6 o'clock, there's a meet and greet with Sean McManus, who is the chairman of CBS Sports Network. It's going to take place up in Stamford, Connecticut at Work Point Ship and Landing. Let me give you an email address if you'd like to go and have a chance to meet one of the real power brokers when it comes to sports. You can email rjmattmedia@gmail.com. Let me spell it out for you. It's rjmatt, M-A-T-T, M-E-D-I-A, at gmail.com. Again, this is coming Wednesday evening, a meet and greet with Sean McManus of CBS Sports. Quick reminder about Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. You know, if you've ever wondered whether the process of visualization in sports really works, I have to tell you, I would strongly advise you pick up a copy of this book. You know, all of our kids focus so much of their time on the physical aspect of their games, like weight training and conditioning and nutrition and so on. But the truth is, very few of our kids ever spend much time really focusing on their mental approach, like visualization. And again, that's covered in some detail in Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. Don't forget, at 9 o'clock this morning, Ed Randall will be here talking baseball. And before I get back to our callers, let me tell you, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, about what seemed to be a seemingly innocent situation, which centered on a kid who plays Little League Baseball. And unfortunately, the kid was born with a condition that does not let him see well. But, you know, this all started back in 2015. Ryan Huizdos of Grosse Pointe, Michigan, as I mentioned, he was born with a condition known as albinism. That's obviously related to being an albino. But among other physical concerns, it also has a tendency to limit one's sight. But his visual disability really didn't prevent him from playing Little League Baseball with all of his buddies, buddies who obviously are fully abled. The only difference is that over the years, Ryan found that using a yellow baseball with the exact same specifications as a standard white baseball, it allowed him to pitch and play with little concern. But back in 2015, when his Little League team reached the district playoffs, Ryan was ready to pitch in a game with a yellow ball when Little League Baseball intervened and declared that the yellow ball was to be banned, and thus Ryan could not play. Now, Little League had ruled that the yellow ball, which, again, same as the white baseball except for the coloration, had not been approved or licensed by Little League Baseball and therefore could not be used in the game. Well, it turned out during those playoffs that the local Little League administrator in Michigan, well, he ignored Little League's ruling and let Ryan play in the game with the yellow ball. But over the course of the next couple of years, Ryan's father was fit to be tied, and he took up the cause against Little League. He found a sympathetic ear with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Detroit, and that lawyer sent off a curt letter to Little League saying, look, all you had to do was make a reasonable accommodation for this kid, and if Little League Baseball doesn't do that, well, they'll probably be found in serious jeopardy of not following the American Disabilities Act. Well, the happy news is it took Little League Baseball 3 years to figure out the right thing to do regarding Ryan, but they finally got the message from the Department of Justice, and Ryan is now allowed to play legally in the games using a yellow baseball. Curiously, the kids who play with Ryan and his opponents, they really don't care. It's the same baseball. It happens to be yellow instead of white, but it allows this kid to play, and he's a pitcher. It allows him to play and play well in terms of just his ruling, which seemed to me like, hey, common sense, Little League. Do the right thing here. And Ryan, you know, observed, he said, quote, I could understand this. It confused me. I've used the yellow ball my entire life. It's just baseball. It's not professional baseball. It's just kids playing ball. So good for Ryan. Yeah, and I understand about getting approvals and licensing deals and all that stuff, but, you know, sometimes you just got to do the right thing. Okay, let's get back to our calls. Let's go to Troy up in Connecticut. Troy, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I've enjoyed listening to your calls, and I just want to talk about coaching a little bit. I coached for over 10 years, girls lacrosse and girls soccer.
Yep.
And the tips you gave me are excellent. And when I was coaching, I found that being prepared, I always wrote everything down.
Yep.
But in addition to that, I also had backup plans because I found out that sometimes you try things, they don't work well, you move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other item I did was I typically had multiple assistant coaches. We did stations. I heard you were talking about that. So we would have coaches do different things that they were good at, and we would work through that. We typically had 20-plus kids for lacrosse, so I could not handle them all by myself.
Sure.
So that's all I want to say, and just listen to what you have to say.
Well, Troy, thank you very much. And again, I know a lot of times we talk on the air here about baseball, which is something that's obviously very near and dear to me. But the fact is, all these the philosophy about working with kids in youth sports, whether it's lacrosse, soccer, baseball, basketball, again, as Troy pointed out and as the previous callers pointed out as well, you got to go through the process as a coach of really taking some time to plan out the practice sessions, write them down, figure out how much time they're going to take, and get the kids moving and on the go. So when they come to a practice, there's no standing around. They're going to, for the next hour or so, they're going to be fully engaged and fully involved in learning skills and drills at all parts of the game. As you know, we also talked about as well, you got to make sure that if you're going to have a little, chalk talk or discussion with your kids and the team, either do that for 5 or 10 minutes before the actual practice, but you can tell them what you want to expect to have happen in terms of the drills. But you also want to make sure if you do at the end of the practice, you don't just ramble on and take forever. Keep your comments short keep them well rehearsed, and just keep it moving, so the kids know what to expect when they have a practice session, you know, each week. Let's go on. Let's go to Tom over in Brick, New Jersey. Tom, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Rick, it all starts with, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a baseball nut.
Okay.
You have to have people that are properly trained to let the kids learn the greatest game in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You need skills far superior than any other sport. And we don't have enough people that we train to say, okay, if you want to do this, you first got to learn how to handle children, especially children under the age of 10, under the age of 10. The basic skill is to throw a baseball and catch a baseball. If you can't teach that, you don't have a program.
Tom, I hear what you're saying. I would venture, and I'm sure you'd probably agree, that of all the sports, in terms of skill level, there are so many different skills in baseball that have to be learned and taught the right way. And, yeah, it's very difficult to find a lot of youth coaches who know how to handle or teach all the aspects of baseball. And to your point, yeah, it all starts with the ability to catch a baseball and to throw a baseball. And that has to be taught. You can't assume any kid knows how to do that. By the time they're playing ball when they're 6 or 7, I mean, one of the drills that coaches should very much be involved in is having kids line up and two lines and throw the ball back and forth to each other. And at the early levels, Tom, you know this, they can't use baseballs. They got to use a soft, squishy ball so the kids can to learn the skills that are necessary without the fear of getting hit in the head with a baseball. It's a real concern because baseball takes some real expert skill level from the coaches to teach those skills to the younger kids. It's very, very difficult and very demanding. Tom, thank you for the call. I'm going to move on here because I'm running out of time. Let me go to John in Flushing, New York. John, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you. You've got a great show.
Thank you, John.
What I'm calling is I have a son that's playing college baseball, Division I baseball.
Uh-huh.
And God blessed me with a 9-year-old. 14 years later, we had another child. So I'm going through this all over again.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
It's great, though. I'm enjoying it.
Good.
The thing that I learned the most about it from the first go around to this one is I think people put up too much emphasis about winning. I think coaches worry about too much about winning and winning at all costs. What I believe, my first one was, is your kid should be getting better and better. Winning and losing takes care of itself.
Well, John, I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad you brought that point up. At the youth level, we're talking, again, ages 6 through 12, there's no question.
Yes.
And John, thank you for your thought this morning. Thanks for reminding me about this. Yeah, at the youth level, you know, it's not about winning or losing. It's about the skill development and getting the kids to come to really love the sport and develop a passion for the sport. If you get a kid who really loves coming to practice and loves to practice on their own and can't wait to play in the game and is getting better and better at their skills, then you have succeeded as a youth coach. Your one-loss record doesn't mean anything. Nobody cares, you know, who wins when the kid is 6 or 10 or 12. That's not important. The fact is your job is to get them engaged, to have fun, to really look forward to the next practice, to the next game. And if you can do that, then you know you've done a good job as a youth coach. And again, I feel that, to John's point, that's often overlooked and forgotten in our current societal expectation. Every game is essential. We have to win at all costs. That's not the way you start to work with kids when it comes to sports. It's as simple as that. Hey, let me take a quick timeout. I'll be back.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.